following talk, entitled The Need to Be Right, was presented on the 17th of March 2024 by Reverend Roz Goldsborough.
So I guess this is a common thing. You're here. I invited you. You could stay away if you don't have this common affliction, the need to be right. You know, about the woman who looked for a long time to find a marriage partner. She wanted Mr. Right. And eventually she found him and married him. And then it wasn't long after that she was complaining, because she said, well, I didn't mean all the time. So Mr. Right. And I remember once in the middle of a crisis that my daughter was going through, I asked her, do you want to be right or happy? And she says, well, both, of course. And I guess that's pretty true too, isn't it? Don't we want to both be right and happy? You know, I was thinking about all the way our whole system is set up, with our justice system, with the way that people end up in divorce courts or small claim courts. It's all about arguing about whether they're right or not. I was really surprised when I was told by Reverend Pat Bessie. So she was the minister at Unity of Greater Portland when I was there, but she was also on the Unity Ethics Committee. And you may not have known that they had one, but this is where ministers or leaders have to go before this committee if they've done something that is considered to be unethical in terms of our code of ethics. And she said, every time someone comes up before that committee, they are convinced that they were right, that what they did was right. And you go, oh, and you know, so it gives pause for thought, doesn't it? About when we're in that position of, wow, I need to prove myself right. And I think about all the arguments that I've had in my life, and you know, there's a good number, it's not that I don't have them now, but when I look at what's going on, they are very often from this need to be right, to prove my point. Does anyone else have that? Yeah, okay, I see. So this is a fairly common thing. So I was looking at, okay, so it's Lent, and it's about letting go. So there's a booklet that Silent Unity has put out this year called Let Go, Let God. And the article for this day, for March the 17th, is written by Ellen Debenport. You probably know her from, she was the author of The Five Principles, Unity Minister. And what she writes is, Jesus, you know, he did a lot of explaining during his ministry. He tried to describe the nature of God, the oneness of humanity with the divine, and our ability to live from Christ consciousness. He told parables, he created memorable sayings, he performed healings and other signs, all in an effort to help his followers understand their own divine nature and the impossibility of being separate from God. She says, what he didn't try to explain was himself, who he was, why he was here, and how we should think of him. We've seen how he let go of others' opinions. Despite wild speculation about him, he didn't defend himself. He let go of needing to be understood. Even when faced with criticism, he didn't have to prove himself right. Now, as I said, I wager that most of my arguments have been from that basis of I'm trying to prove myself right. And we see this most vividly in the most dire circumstances at his trial. The four Gospels differ somewhat in the telling of his appearance before the Roman governor Pilate. And only in Luke, the regional ruler, and only in Luke, the regional ruler Herod. But in each version, Jesus simply refused to explain himself. Matthew is the most succinct. So now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, so this is quoting from Matthew, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said, "You say so." And I'm going, for goodness sake, say, I have not said that. But he just says, "You say so." So when he's accused by the chief priests and the elders, he doesn't answer. He doesn't say anything. Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many accusations they make against you?" But he gave no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. You can read that for yourself in Matthew 27, 11 to 14. So the governor was greatly amazed. I'm greatly amazed, aren't you? Here he is. He's being accused of these things. You're the king of the Jews. You're this Messiah. And he's going, "You say so." Whoa. You know, what's going on here? I'm wondering about, you know, this whole thing about the, you know, why would Jesus not have defended himself? Why was he just going to allow whatever's going to happen to him? So I'm thinking about this in terms of, okay, here I am, you know, when I get into an argument, I want to prove myself right. Is it because part of my thinking is, well, if I don't, if I just stand here and go, well, you say so, I'm going to get crucified? Do you think, is it possible that somehow we've taken on this idea that it's not going to be a good outcome if we just stay mute? I don't know. What do you think? See, I'm reminded of Paul Hasselbeck. He says, you know, with any interaction, there are two questions that are kind of going on within people. Am I safe? And do I matter? Am I safe? And do I matter? And it's like, okay, so is this then what's prompting this place that where we come from? I've got to make my point here. I've got to be proved right. Because if I don't, I'm not safe. Maybe I'll be crucified. But then I thought, oh, okay, so crucifixion, maybe I need to look at, remind myself. So, what is crucifixion in the way that we talk about it in Unity? So, of course, the revealing word is helpful for this. Let me just find, I do have it here somewhere. So, from the revealing word, so you know, this is Charles Fillmore's work, co-founder of Unity. He wrote, crucifixion is the crossing out in consciousness of errors that have become fixed states of mind, the surrender or death of the whole personality in order that the Christ mind may be expressed in all its fullness. So the crucifixion of Jesus, this is still from the revealing word. So the crucifixion of Jesus represents the wiping of personality out of consciousness. We deny the human self so that we may unite with the selfless. We give up the mortal so that we may attain the immortal. We dissolve the thought of the physical body so that we may realize the spiritual body. Now, let's remember that these words were written, you know, about 100 years ago. And we've actually moved on from the way that we think about it. So we don't necessarily say that we have to wipe out the personality in order to experience the spiritual, our divine nature. In fact, the phrase that's often used now is, I am fully human, I'm fully divine. It's not either or, that the both things can be in parallel. So am I safe? Do I matter? Are you safe? Do you matter? Do those questions, do you think those questions are behind some of the arguments that you might have had? I know that I can have a real visceral reaction when I feel like I haven't been heard. So then there's a part, you know, then there's like this sort of righteous anger, this feeling in my body. And, you know, I can, and it's very, very fiery, I can tell you. I guess that's my fire sign. I am a Sagittarian after all. But that, you know, that gets me going. And it's like from that basis of, don't I matter here? Have you not heard me? There was an occasion just after a few months when we had moved to Maine to live in the US for a while, and we hadn't been there all that long, and we received a bill from the IRS. So that's the inland, you know, the tax department of the government, a bill for $8,000. And it was like, oh, I could, you know, this feeling of that's not right. How can that be? We've only been here a short time. How can we suddenly owe them $8,000? We paid all our taxes before we left New Zealand, and John was salaried, so he was paying his taxes as they came due each salary. Well, it was taken out before he received his salary. And, you know, I can really remember the kind of righteous indignation in me around that. So what do we do? What do we do with this idea of what do you do with when you've got this? And I didn't feel that I was in a position that I could front up to the IRS. You know, I'm an alien in this country. In America, you're called an alien. And trying to just challenge it directly. And so I used what I'd learned through Unity, and I had as a mantra for a while, there is a divine solution to this situation. Those of you who know me know this is one of my favorite affirmations. There is a divine solution to this situation. The divine solution is the sublime solution. I give thanks that the divine solution quickly appears now. And I would keep that up because I was quite concerned about this huge bill. But as I kept this up, I got a sense of peace around it. And somehow this whole thing disappeared. Now, I haven't actually checked with John lately. Maybe he did something. Somehow this bill just disappeared. So am I safe and do I matter? There was, you know, in terms of getting to a point of, and I suppose this was really working with this old way of thinking about surrendering our personality, I came across this statement. I surrender to my God self and I go free. And that was something I worked with for quite a number of weeks, if not months. And I remember waking up in the night being terrified, having quite a feeling of fear within me about, well, what does that mean? What would that mean? I think what it meant in the end was that I came to a place of saying, I am safe. I do matter. Some assurance, and we are promised that sometimes, aren't we? That when we get to a place of peace within ourselves, a peace that passes all understanding, then we do know that everything is okay, everything is well. So is it to do with, do you think, this idea that we should be agreeing with our adversary quickly. That's a statement from 5:25, and that's Matthew 5:25. Agree with thy adversary quickly, because the bit that he goes on to say from that is, otherwise you might be taken to the judge and thrown into prison. Well, I guess that was exactly what happened with Jesus, in a sense, wasn't it? He just goes, well, you say so. And his end was, well, how do we interpret it? Was it a good end or was it not? If we were the conservative institution, which I don't believe we are, we might go, well, yeah, he had to die for our sins, but we don't necessarily believe that. I don't believe that we are sinners. I rather like the way that Matthew Fox, that Dominican scholar and author, talks about us as original blessings. Don't you like that? We are original blessings. And one of his major themes in that book, Original Blessing, is about letting go. Let's see if I can just find what the number of, one of his major themes is called emptying, letting go of images, and letting silence be silence. So we're wondering whether, is that what Jesus was doing, just letting the silence speak? There was a lot of chaos going around him, a lot of accusations, and he just remained silent. Matthew Fox uses a number of quotes to capture this, and I particularly like this one from Thomas Merton. O silence, golden zero, unsettling sun, love winter when the plant says nothing. Love winter when the plant says nothing. So letting go of the need to be right, letting go of that need to defend my argument, to make sure that my point of view gets put across. Maybe we take on that just the, well, you say so. How does that sit with you? Well, you say so. In the training that I did with Bob Proctor up in Toronto, that was actually one of the things that he was saying. You know, someone's saying a point of view which you disagree with. He said, rather than get into an argument, he'd just say, you may be right. You may be right. And, I don't know about you, but I actually find it really hard to do, to go from that position. There's still this need to be right. During COVID, I was, I don't know whether you had experienced this, but there was quite a division in communities and groups about being vaccinated or not vaccinated. And it became quite heated in our community here. We had both. We had people from both sides. And I remember at one stage, in the midst of this, with someone that I'm very close to, and we were on opposite sides of things. And I remember kind of swallowing and going, you may be right. You may be right. And it was amazing how it actually just managed to calm the waters, and so that we could continue to be in relationship. So maybe that is the answer in there somewhere. You say so. Think about whether you feel safe. Am I safe? Do I matter? And you may be right. No need to defend oneself. So next time it comes up for you, see what response you might want to have. You want to get into the argument, prove yourself right, the need to be right, or yeah, you may be right. That's all I have for you today.
Thank you very much, Ros. That's wonderful. Would you like to lead us in a meditation? That's the question.
Oh,
get us into a meditative state. So I'll bring up. Thank you.
So I invite you to take a deep breath and just hold it and then let it go with a nice sigh. I love that I learned at one stage that a sigh is as good as Valium, better than probably. Well, let's use the deep breath and the sigh just to take yourself into a more relaxed state. From that place, know that you do matter. That you are safe. That it's all right to let go of being right. It's safe to do so. The crucifixion is just a crossing out of error thought. We can let go of the need to be right. In my vulnerability, my safety lies. We have no need to defend. We have no need to prove. We can know with absolute assurance that we are safe, that we matter. So just for the next few moments in the silence, know your worth. So from that place of knowing that it is safe to let go of being the need to be right, and give thanks. And so it is. Amen.